Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Sarah Pascoe.
Hello, I'm Carrie Ad-Lloyd.
And we're weird about books.
We love to read.
We read too much.
We talk too much.
About the too much that we've read.
Which is why we've created
the Weirdos Book Club.
Join us!
A space for the lonely outsider to feel accepted and appreciated.
A place for the person who'd love to be in a real book club but doesn't like wine or nibbles.
Or being around other people.
Is that you? Join us.
Check out our Instagram at Sarah and Carrie Ad's Weirdos Book Club for the upcoming books we're going to be discussing.
You can read along
and share your opinions.
Or just skulk around in your raincoat like the weirdo you are.
Thank you for reading with us. We like reading with you. This week's book guest is Beyond Black by Hilary Mantel.
What's it about? It's about a psychic called Alison who's haunted by spirit guides and her assistant Colette as they navigate life on the road in 1997 suburban England.
What qualifies it for the Weirdos Book Club? Well, most of the characters are horrible ghosts. In this episode, we discuss
touring,
mediums,
the occult,
and Princess Diana. And joining us this week is Mike Wozniak. Mike is a critically lauded comedian and actor. Catch him live if you can, or listen to the very, very funny Three Bean Salad podcast.
Trigger warning, this episode contains mention of murder, child abuse, eating disorders, and abortion.
Hi, Mike.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, Mike.
Hiya.
We're really excited to talk to you and see you.
I'm excited to see you. Both.
I'm excited. But not about the chatting,
well,
about
the chatting
books.
Well, this is the most sort of trepidatious I've been about doing a podcast, I think.
Why? Are we intimidated?
Does it feel like an exam? Are you scared of us?
Correct me if I'm wrong. I think you've both got English literature degrees.
Correct.
The same one.
Mm. Right. Sort of Brighton, Sussex type business. Yeah.
You've been listening over the past 15 years.
It's gone in. I don't have that. The last time
You've got a little medical degree.
Yeah, but just a tiny medical
we didn't
degree.
Cover contemporary fiction.
Did they not? That's the problem with the NHS.
Yeah, exactly.
They need to cover this stuff. They need to.
I don't think I've formally studied literature since GCSE.
But you are very clever.
I pretend to be clever.
You've got a clever sounding voice and a moustache.
I know, but that's it. But that's the middle-aged man's trick, isn't it?
Most readers wouldn't have official qualifications in reading. But you wouldn't think, oh, that precludes how they feel about a book or their thoughts about a book.
Oh, no, that's true. I'd agree with that. But whether or not anyone...
Thank you for agreeing it, Mr. Dr. White.
Whether or not anyone necessarily wants me to add my tuppence in.
We want your tuppence.
Even GCSE level, you see, my sister...
Yeah. Is she more the Englishy side?
Well, she also did English literature at university.
Could we book her for a different episode?
Twin sister also meant that basically I... As a teenager, just copied her homework. So even at the age of 13, I wasn't engaging fully in the process.
Okay.
So I've not.
How near does she live? Can she get here?
She's
in a couple of minutes,
mate. Yeah, right. She's up the road.
Okay. Yeah. So she can get here quick.
I think this is what's good about adulthood. Yeah. Because what you've just confessed
is
that you were able to sort of, you know, like a goose, fly behind someone.
Yeah.
In the slipstream of your sister's intelligence.
Yes.
Exactly.
Whereas now it's time to flourish by yourself. Now it's time for you to be open and realise that everything you've got to say is valid and people do care.
Yeah.
We care.
If you want to suddenly...
So the solo goose gets cooked, as they
the
say.
Worm. The worm. Yeah, exactly. I'm misremembering it.
Yeah, okay. No, the solo goose...
Solo goose gets the worm. Well done, goose.
Solo
Happy
goose
Christmas.
Goes to Waterstones.
Okay.
Buys something they like the look of, learns a bit about themselves.
Yeah.
Maybe is able to buy it just off points.
Yeah, yes. But paperback, not hardback, because he's got wings.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Or tiny goose... feet.
Also, if you at any point you want to just break out into like medical lingo to make yourself feel confident again.
All right. Okay.
And then have me and Sarah be like, oh, we don't know what you're talking about. So like the balance is restored.
Also, I think there's probably been advances in medicine since you were practicing, isn't there?
Oh, I certainly hope so.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's been a while.
No more leeches. Yeah. Not anymore.
It's leech it or chop it off, basically. That's why I couldn't remember.
They shouldn't let gooses become doctors. That's
no.
Gooses.
Let's go gooses. Let's try and bring that back.
I would love to start, Mike, by asking Carrie had a question, which is, why did you pick this book for us to read?
Well, that's a bit of a tricksy question, because I didn't quite pick it. It was on our list of books, so we have a list of books that we think
you,
would be
good.
But you
put it on our list.
No, I offered Mike three, and Mike chose
it. You would put it on our list originally.
Oh, originally, just because... Hilary Mantel.
We love Hilary Mantel.
Yep. We fucking love Hilary Mantel.
Yeah.
Okay.
But you're not going to give someone Wolf Hall for this podcast. That's harsh. And you're not going to give them Place of Greater Safety.
We would. Which is the first Mantel I read, and I think still probably my favourite.
And that is a hefty, hefty
title. It's about the French Revolution.
I've not read that
it's
one.
It's huge. No. It would be cruel. Yeah. And so in my memory, Beyond Black was the lighter of her.
Oh, I see. So it was a length thing.
I was like, okay. Oh, it's a bit lighter. And
this
also
is the Mantel novella.
Yeah. And also I thought lots of people haven't read this one or aren't familiar with it because they're mostly familiar with the Wolf Hall trilogy.
She won the Booker Prize. She's like the John Kearns of literature.
Yeah, she was John Kearns. She said that. She referred to herself as the John Kearns of literature. This was also long listed for the Booker Prize. So she was,
everything she touches turns to gold.
So I actually gave Mike a list of three, and I something about this. I thought, oh yeah, Mantel and the sort of psychicness. I don't know. I thought, well, I think Mike would like that. So that's what.
I can't remember what the other two were now, but I wasn't instantly drawn to this one.
Oh well, that's good. Have you ever read any Mantel before?
Only Wolf Hall.
Okay.
That's it.
What was your first response?
The very, very first impression.
Mm. Yeah.
Opening, well, to be completely honest, the very first opening, the sort of prologue bit reminded me, it sounds a bit narcissistic, reminded me of starting stand-up.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, going to small towns.
It was quite
and
visceral.
To,
and not just small towns, but the fact that Alison focuses around these sort of dormitory towns around London.
It felt, such like a good comparison.
It's kind of phase 1B of stand-up.
Yeah,
so phase one, you're doing these sort of, you're properly in the middle of a huge city doing a tiny little open mic thing. And then all of a sudden there's this opportunity, you could do the middle spot for 20 quid in Fleet. You know, and you'd go there, but there'd also be a quiz going on the same night in the pub in Fleet. You'd be performing on the sort of space between the Strongbow and the extra cold Guinness. There's a fruit machine that's still on that the guy refuses to
turn off. The venue manager
off.
Comes in and says to you, nice to have a woman. Don't know how they'll like it, but nice to have one.
Exactly.
Did they say that to you, Mike?
All that's, exactly. I'm sick and tired of that. All that's going on. And you know that Fleet has definitely got a serviceable art centre. There must be one.
But so why are you here?
That's not where the gig is.
Yeah.
So it's that.
We should say Alison is a psychic medium.
Yes.
And that's what she's doing. She's going around doing psychic.
Are we assuming the listeners might not have read the...
We ask because not everybody, not everyone has the time, as you know, to read all the books.
Okay.
What we hope is that people listen to think, oh, I would like to read that.
Okay.
But I'm just telling them so why it's like stand up because she is also on a circuit doing psychic shows. Really.
And nervous before she goes out. I mean, looking at the audience to think, you know, who are they?
Yeah, the trade, as they're called.
Although one thing,
yes,
I was troubled about. I'll just be honest. I found a lot of this book troubling on a reread.
Oh.
On a reread so many years later.
There is a few things that definitely
the travel
come
card
up.
I found in there was 2010.
It came out in 2005.
Yes. I think I must have read it in 2010 and didn't remember a single word.
Right.
Which is scary, isn't it?
Yeah. I tell you, I remembered 100% the opening because it's set in Potter's Bar, which is where I went to school.
Ah.
And she describes Potter's Bar as a kind of hellhole. And
that's my first
immediately.
Problem.
I was like, yeah, because starting, the way she describes Potter's Bar is, 4 o'clock, light sinking over the Orbital Road, tea time in Enfield, night falling on Potter's Bar. Makes it
sort of more abandoned fridges than people on the streets.
Yeah, I thought she was very judgmental of the people of Britain.
Fair play to Potter's Bar, personally. I think she did well on that.
Really?
Yeah.
There were times where I couldn't, you know, with an author where you think, do you really think that? Or does your narrator or your character think
that? Yeah, does Alison think that? Does Hillary think it?
Yes. And I there were several things where I was like, it made me really fascinated about Hillary Mantel going, you really do hate the common man and woman.
I know what you mean. Yeah. I feel like
I didn't know much about her background, though, her early life. So I didn't know if she had a privileged upbringing or...
It's a bit of a mix, actually. Yeah. And she had quite a difficult childhood, I think.
Yeah.
Equally. She had her own, what she thinks was sort of psychic experiences.
She believed in ghosts.
Yeah.
And at the back of the book, there's a short interview of her in my one, and it says, she says, the good thing about being a writer is you take your bad experience and make them pay.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, which made me... And obviously, there's lots and lots of bad experiences in this book.
Yeah.
And again, it makes you think, oh, gosh.
Yeah, I sort of hope it isn't autobiographical.
Yes, I really hope
that. Really
sort
of deeply.
Yeah, because Alison is... I think Alison... So Alison is a genuine psychic in this story, in that she really can speak to spirits, but her spirits are horrible, horrible, foul fiends, she calls them, who are the old men who have died, but essentially what we discover... used to hang around her mother, who was a prostitute, and hang out at the house with her and potentially... molested her as well. But this is all dealt with very, like, not, you know what I mean? It's not in that kind of, like, that doesn't come out. That takes ages to come out.
It's drip-fed, isn't it?
It's drip-fed, and even it's never confirmed. Alison can't remember. So there's a lot of stuff about memory and struggling to, like, what does it mean with the past and what the past literally haunting you.
And also, it's important to flag, it is a comedy.
Yeah.
Because, so it's a very black, dark comedy. Yeah. Where there are some incredible jokes, while the background is horrific.
Yeah, and I think...
Every single trigger warning.
Yeah, trigger warning, but like you, I didn't remember any of that being...
Well, I think I enjoyed it the first time.
I think it is a novel that's... We've moved into a different time. In 2005, I would have read this very differently to now.
I think young people are psychopathic, or much less empathetic. That's what I think it is. I think in my 20s, I read loads of stuff... Mm-hmm. Where awful things happened and none of it touched me. And now I'm...
I think you don't quite grasp it. Like, I didn't quite grasp how awful Alison's childhood was. Whereas rereading it, so we should say she gets an assistant called Colette, who is very unsympathetic to everybody. And their relationship is basically the core of the book. But when they do talk about what happened to Alison, Colette kind of makes a joke and is like, your mum had you molested and she sounds like she sold tickets to it. And then it's kind of, they start talking about something else.
She's another abuser, basically.
Yes, yeah.
She does become Colette. That way, doesn't she? Yeah. Did you like Colette to begin with, Mike?
I was suspicious of Colette.
Mm. You're definitely meant to be, aren't you?
To begin with. And there's this odd thing where in the opening, the first time you meet Colette, when they're quite well established in their relationship, Colette is already physically disgusted by Alison's physical appearance.
Alison is much bigger than Colette. Colette is described as, you know, bird-like
very
and skinny.
Thin and
Alison is much bigger. And there's a line that Alison says she's a size 20 and Colette's like, you're a size 26 and you are embarrassed about it.
Yeah.
And they kind of, like, the weight is a huge issue with both of them.
Yeah, so she can be scathing. And she's also openly sceptical about the whole thing that they're doing, even though at no point would Alison ever admit there's anything to be sceptical about, which would sort of chip away at a person. A fair bit. And there's also this thing, which again has got sort of showbiz parallel, where...
Because she's kind of a manager.
Alison's manager. She's sort of infantilized a little bit.
Yeah.
By her. Even if Alison suggests a drink in the opening, she says, no, what about this drink? Don't have a tea or a coffee, have a G&T or whatever. There's the little bits of control.
Do you have someone that goes on tour with you?
That always chooses my drinks.
Because it is lovely to have someone to take that responsibility. I once did support for Catherine Ryan when she played Colchester, because then my family could get in for free. And so it all worked out lovely. And when we got in the car back to London, we all had a can of gin and tonic next to us in the car.
Oh, nice.
And I was like, oh, this is how you live, Catherine Ryan, isn't it? Little can of Marks and Spencer's. You don't even have to think, do I want a gin and tonic? Just drink it.
Just drink it.
Just drink it. You've got one.
Don't think about what happened.
And you can get to, I mean, I go solo. partly because I think I will just completely lose my marbles otherwise. But you can't, it'd be very easy as a performer to just let everyone sort of do everything for you, guide you here and there, tell you what you're doing, when.
As you become more successful, there's more people.
These things can be, skills can be stripped away, I think.
Who wants to take that from you? Yeah.
They have a really interesting relationship in that coercive control is at play. Colette controls her food, is constantly at her about her weight.
At the end.
But also, Alison, as you said, lets her, sometimes enjoys it. And my question for everyone was like, what is changed at the end of this book? Because they are together for 7 years and it becomes extremely destructive. And I sort of feel like Alison gets something from this relationship, as, you know, not really a spoiler, but like her life changes. She kind of changes how she is a psychic. But Colette seems to come into her life, spend 7 years telling her she's a piece of shit, and then goes back to her life.
At the beginning, I thought Colette was fantastic because she was so organised.
Yeah, she's really skilled.
She does allow, you know, at the beginning it seemed like she was an enabler to Alison, and then it became abusive. I don't think she was a very well-rounded character. I don't think she was necessarily real, because her voice at the end just seemed to be to criticise Alison. It didn't seem like there was a real person.
But this is what I found interesting, is that, like you say, the reason they get on is Colette comes in and basically Alison, you know, she can't book her gigs, she can't do her emails, she can't do her taxes.
She's not monetizing her work properly, she's not doing her VAT return. So having all of that stuff taken away from you.
So Colette comes in, sorts it all out, and there's a bit where they're very happy and they buy a house together. And
Alison's very lonely, so she's sort of buying Colette. She sort of wants company.
Yeah.
And a live person.
But this is what's interesting. I think Colette crucially is very critical and horrible to her, sort of in this world. So you can hear Colette being horrible, but Alison is actually very manipulative and kind of uses Colette to get... At the end, I was like, Alison has benefited from this relationship. And the whole time, there's lots of Alison not saying things to Colette, but making decisions about Colette. Does that make sense? That... Colette will be like, oh, you're disgusting, you're overweight, I hate you. And Alison won't say anything, but she'll be like, I sort of don't need you anymore, and I've kind of got what I need. And then they kind of break up. And I, at the end of it, I was like, I found Colette really believable, but I was frustrated that she just went back to her, she went back to Gavin, awful Gavin.
So do you think Alison, because this is...
I think Alison has more power than she lets on.
That's interesting. Yeah. Okay, okay.
But Alison dies at the end.
What?
Did you think she died at the end?
I didn't, no.
Did you think she died at the end?
No.
I think she dies at the end.
Where do you say that?
When the lorry overtakes them, and there's like, it's oblique, but she dies in the car, happy with two ghosts.
I didn't get that.
She puts her foot down to overtake in the fast lane a massive truck, and she's half hidden by the spray, and then it stops.
Oh, okay.
I think she dies.
I think maybe you're right. I've just realised one of my favourite things is someone revealing to me that someone was dead at the end. It's such a sweet move. I think I'm going to start doing it willy-nilly.
Yeah.
For all kinds of stuff.
But have you seen the Barbie movie? Oh, Sandra's dead all along, isn't it?
I didn't get that. But now you say it, I think you're right.
I think there is so much in this book which is oblique, if that's the right word, opaque. Sort of, she tells you mistily, and I think this moment is very similar. Yeah. So it's a happy ending, but it is a happy ending of her passing over.
Yes, and but that's what I mean, is Alison gets what she wants at the end. And I don't think...
Death with cake.
Yeah, and like she gets nice ghosts, she gets rid of her fiends, lovely, these horrible ghosts, men that have haunted her life.
Yeah.
She gets the old lady ghosts.
And she gets her memories, doesn't she?
She gets her memories, and she discovers what happened, and she sort of processes it.
Yeah.
But I feel like Alison, that character really moves, and yet I feel like Colette doesn't, and that's sort of... I feel like Hillary's saying that's Colette's kind of like...
What's her judgment on a woman like that? Is that actually you never want anything, and so you end up going back to where you started?
Yeah, that's why I found it real, because I was like, there's people in life that want to change and people that don't, and Colette doesn't want to be changed.
Don't do the work, as Lou Sanders would say.
Don't do the work.
Don't do the work.
So do you think Alison got rid of Colette in the end? Because she's very passive in the relationship.
I think that she...
That's an interesting take.
It's passive, but I think by the end...
Like a breakup when someone knows that they want to break up.
Yeah.
And they don't break up by saying, I think we're having problems. They break up by continuing the habits that are really irritating the other person. So that they leave.
Yeah, she becomes... She does kick it over to this... She crosses the line with Colette, doesn't she? And becomes... Like, it is unbearable. And then when she takes in that...
Right.
The homeless guy...
Mart.
all of that. She knows
full
is,
well that
knowing
will
full
be
well that
Colette anathema.
Will, yeah, Colette will not be able to handle that.
Yeah.
And she also is watching Colette all the time. Like when she sees her with Gavin in the phone calls, she can read her mind.
Yeah.
I think Alison knew she needed Colette. Colette came, sorted her life out, helped her, and then she realised, oh, Colette's not going to get rid of Morris. I have to get rid of Morris.
Yeah. Mm.
And then I think Alison has more power than she lets on, but I still think Colette is quite a horrible character.
Bring it back to Alison's size, which is what Colette keeps going on about obsessively, and she starves her at the end and isn't letting her, she's controlling her food, you know. That was something, again, where I wondered what Hillary, the human being writing this, felt about it. And this felt so fat-phobic. It felt like there was so much hatred, and I know it was via a character and characters.
Yeah.
Many characters referred to her as a fat girl or the fat woman.
Yeah,
it comes up all the time. Yeah.
And there were lots of, and I'm going to say it's inverted commas, jokes about her weight and, oh, you won't need to eat that, and oh, not for you, that kind of thing. And I didn't know where she sat with it, whether she was really enjoying it as someone who has had people say horrible things to her, perhaps, or been bullied at school or something.
I assumed it was cathartic. I don't know.
Really? I hope it was.
Yeah, I hoped.
I hope it was.
That was the idea that she's...
A bit like a comic, being like,
pay.
I'm going to make the joke before you do.
Yeah.
I know. But there's two ways of that. There's the way where you go, oh, ha, 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 we're laughing because you actually really love yourself and are comfortable and are showing how stupid it is to judge someone on something like their size. And then there's the other kind. Like, I remember watching a new comic talking about chubby chasers, and it was really uncomfortable because she was a really attractive young woman saying, like, the only men I can get are called, have you heard of chubby chasers? And you're like, this is all horrible.
Yeah.
Because what you're picking up on is low self-esteem as someone who isn't in that, you know.
Yeah.
It actually is.
Place
yet. I think
they think other people think they're fat, so they're saying it first is different to.
I think reading anything in 2023 that isn't from like the last 3 years is really like your brain has to work hard because so much has changed since 2005. What I found really interesting was Alison's description of she needs that weight because of the spirits. So because she has this, like, they're so horrific, and she describes it as like, I have to house so many people, my flesh is so capacious, I am a settlement, a place of safety, a bomb-proof shelter. Boom, she said softly. And I found that description of her emotional connection to it really fascinating.
Well, also, you know, fat is a feminist issue by Susie Orbach, and one of the things that she talks about a lot is fat as protection from the world. People who have had upsetting childhoods or certain things, that there's literally an insulation.
Yeah, and that's what
protect you from other people,
Alison's
and
doing.
To push other people away, to give you more room from other people.
But the fact that because she gets so many, these spirits overtake her, and like she speaks in different voices, and she can't control them.
So, Mike, I was going to ask you though about the occult, the other side in general.
Yeah.
Have you ever been to a psychic or been interested?
Oh, yeah. I'm interested. I've never been. I'm interested. I wouldn't say
your
that.
Your aura doesn't have much to tell.
No, exactly. I'm just a sort of Colette-based sort of cipher of nothing. I'm intrigued by it. I love all that stuff. I've never been.
So would
at
you
a
be
seance.
Easily persuaded to go if someone said, "Oh, I'm going to, going to a reading"?
Oh yeah, I'd be bang up for going just out of curiosity, and more so after reading this book, explore the scene. And I'm open to the idea that there are things going on that we don't quite understand, but that might even just be psychological, whatever it might be.
Absolutely.
Because it's so huge, people's experiences of the paranormal, that I don't necessarily believe that there are spectral things out there, but I think we haven't quite understood what's happening in the brain.
And also a lot of the people who do this kind of job, what they're reading is the person in front of them very well.
Yeah.
And saying it's coming from the other side. So right,
which Alison is able to do a bit as well, isn't she?
Yeah, she's good at the trade, standing on stage.
When not much is happening, or if she's being intruded by the wrong kind of...
Yes.
I love that she has ghosts that are hoaxers.
Or she says, like, impersonators, if they're like an Elvis impersonator here, when they get on the other side, they stay hassling you being an Elvis
coming
impersonator.
Coming through as Elvis,
And you're like, I know you're fake. I think her...
It's a lovely idea.
The way Hilary Mantel describes the spirit world and the way she describes the dead is of like, you can't trust them. Like, they don't know what they're saying. They don't, so they don't always know they're dead. Mm. They're unreliable. They're unreliable narrators.
And they're legion, so interesting as well. They, I think they even put the numbers in somewhere. One of the mediums says they outnumber us 30-1.
Or yeah. Yeah.
And then she says, what does it look like on the other side? It's like Aldershot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
What did we think of the Princess Diana stuff?
I love that stuff.
In the book,
I absolutely love that.
Diana dies. It is set in 1997. Diana dies, and all the psychics feel the effect greatly.
Yeah.
Obviously, Hilary Mantel was also famous. She's written lots of that famous essay about the royal family and Kate Middleton, and you definitely get her sense of.
I don't think she was a big fan of, if not Princess Diana herself, the outpouring for Princess Diana. That was another moment where I thought the author's opinion here is coming through.
Did you think that? Because for me, it felt more like a reflection of it. And there was definitely, I know she definitely wasn't like pro everybody, but it just felt like an honest reflection of what Britain was like at that point to me. Mm. I didn't see or hear her opinion as much as I felt like, yeah, that's what it was like. There was this huge, insane outpouring.
Yeah.
And it was
I felt like she found it ghoulish. Because it was, I think one of the elements I really love that not only the medium, all the sensitive casts, they feel it themselves, but they then have this huge amount of work because everyone
wants to talk to Diana.
But it's so much work. It's not as if no one's talking about a boom time. It's not like, brilliant, we're printing money here. We're going to be able to afford to go off on a package holiday to Mallorca or whatever it is. It's they're exhausted. They can't wait for it to settle down. They're done in.
Yeah, but she keeps making the point that everyone who wants to talk about Princess Diana is actually talking about themselves.
Yeah, yeah.
The reason they thought she represented them and was like them. And that my dad, not just about Princess Diana, but many things, is the kind of person that if you're crying at the news, would walk in and go, you're crying for yourself, you know. You're crying for yourself. And Princess Diana, of course, was a big... Everyone's crying for themselves.
Everyone was crying for themselves, yeah.
And that's what Hilary Mantel was saying in a more sophisticated way.
About
the representation of Diana.
But I didn't mind that. Did you feel like it was too much Mantel's opinion?
I thought it was a little spiteful. But again, I don't know if it's her opinion or if it's the characters. There were lots and lots of points where there was loads of racist language in this book.
Oh, we should talk about that so much.
And you know, and there's a variety of racism, disablest language, all these kind of things. The word ethnics is used a lot by central characters. Yeah. Does she think this is a true representation of how certain people speak?
I was surprised at quite how racist Alison and Colette were in that kind of... I don't mean this, but like that light racism of just like, I'm just referring to everyone as other, basically.
I wanted to say lazy.
I don't want to
racism.
Do business with...
Says I don't do foreigns at one point.
Yeah, and that's the thing. So with the Princess Diana thing was the way they spoke about Dodi. So there was even racism
in
those areas. And that's why it felt spiteful. It felt like the representation of her was a bit dim, and then she forgets her son's names.
She calls one.
That was really weird.
So because she was a real person, this is why I say I felt troubled with it. Mm. It reminded me of watching a comic. I know, because Hilary Mantel is a really, really, really funny writer.
Brilliant,
Watching a comic, not knowing... Do you mean that or not?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So it reminded me of going, are you in control of this? And you're actually really, you know, agitating me and showing me something.
Yeah.
Or not. And she doesn't ever tell you because it's a novel. She doesn't go.
That's true. Because it is a good illustration of commuter belt.
England.
At that time, there would have been lots of that language and lots of. I mean, as a historical document for turn of the millennium.
There would
have been a lot of that.
Yeah, you go to a friend's house after school and you have to listen to their dad using a certain language. Yeah, that's what it reminds me of, and that uncomfortableness. I can't make you stop. I think my issue is that, and I say this as someone who tours, is that it's very easy to do a two-dimensional, these people are all like that.
And it's
a kind of othering where actually everyone, you know, cares about their family, worries, has anxieties about the dog's been limping. Everyone has this spectrum of human emotion, and it's really easy to go, they just care about this, or they're just this thing that's... And a lot of comedy does it. We reduce people so we can
make
jokes about them, which is what this book does.
But it's interesting because I totally agree with you. And the new build, the couple that live next door, are like from a sitcom, you know, like they're just this awful... Like, who hate their kids, and their kids are screaming, and they're so nosy, and they're really...
They assume they're lesbians because they're two women living
together. And, you know... But what's so interesting about Mantel is she can create characters that are so complex and so subtle and not that, but then she does also do that. So I know I completely agree with you, but she, and I think Wolf Hall, if you've read any of those, like the characters there are a masterclass in like subtlety and nuance and people not always being what they say they are.
She allows herself a little sketch, doesn't she?
Yeah.
Like if she's got a salesperson.
The person separate. Who sells them the house.
The house and then the shed, there's another one. There's like
The shed.
They're both
guy.
Like little bits of satire into
sales.
It's the only industry there is because it's a dormitory town. There's nothing.
Yeah, there's nothing
no
else.
No one works there. The only people who work there are the people who are selling you stuff you don't want or need.
She is very definitely snobby about it. I definitely picked up the snobbiness.
I think this is why I found it troubling.
Yeah.
It's because it's a comedy book about really, really dark things.
Yeah.
And comedy is flippant and comedy is sketches. And so, but then the heavy side of it, I think it's probably where I am in my actual life. I couldn't help taking certain stuff literally or like wanting her to take, I wanted to sort of go, come on, don't just drop in some child abuse.
I know what you mean. Yeah. Like I found, like I said, when it sort of revealed what's happened to Alison and Colette is so offhand about it, I had to go back and reread that because I was like, did I miss something? Because before that, it's all very shadowy and vague of like what happened with these men and her mum, and there was money and she saw something in the back of the garden, but we don't know what she saw. Yeah. And then when it starts getting nailed down a bit, you're like, what the fuck?
But even quite early on, there's a dog attack.
Yeah.
And then the dog is attacked in turn.
Well, I think also that she's using it as well for the character of Alison, that Alison is trying to better herself and Alison's trying to drag. And she says, doesn't she, to Colette, like, you don't understand. I'm the house that had the bathtub in the front garden and it was there my whole life. Like, that's where I'm from. I'm from nothing. What I liked about it, what reminded me of my side of the family, the idea that when trauma comes in, it's everything's treated as a joke.
Yes.
And that felt very real to me.
Okay.
Even though I know what you mean about being snobbish, it felt very real that it's just like, oh, well, worst things happen at sea. Like, there you go.
Which is what Colette's attitude is.
You're crying for yourself. Yes. Yeah. It's just like, but nobody, Alison doesn't, like you said, that feeling of wanting Alison to take what happened to her seriously. She can't because no one does. Colette doesn't. Her mum doesn't.
I didn't need Alison to do it. I needed the writer.
But I feel like Hillary is being led by Alison. Do you know what I mean? I feel like Alison doesn't take it seriously. So it would be very hard for Hillary to then come in and moralise.
Hillary definitely wrote the book she intended to write.
Yeah.
I think reading it now, newly postpartum, is why I'm just taking everything too literally. Everything's too emotional. And so someone being flippant about something involving a child,
right.
I just cannot.
Yeah.
That's what I think. And that's why I think it didn't bother me the first time around. I just read it as, you know, hilarious black comedy.
But I know what you mean. I think Hillary is allowing Alison to have such a strong voice that Alison can't look at it, and so nobody looks at it. Yeah. And that's the thing, like, it takes Alison to the end of the book to even remember what actually happened to her. And even, you know, I sort of get the impression she's 40s and she's still like, Colette's one of the first people to be like, what happened? She's like, oh, I don't know. Like, my childhood. Which nowadays we talk about so much, like, our childhood and how we're affected. But she's definitely that generation. It's like, oh, yes, gosh, it was really awful. And there was all these criminals and I was attacked by a dog. Anyway, like, Alison, no one's ever looked at Alison.
Colette
past.
Is very impatient about, doesn't want to, which we've all come across, people that... Very uncomfortable as soon as that starts.
That doesn't change
what we have to do now. We have to work out which junction we're going to take on the M25.
Yeah.
Jared, have you ever been to a psychic?
Yes, I have. Yeah, in Brighton. Couple of times, obviously, living in Brighton.
As in for reading or
I had a tarot. I haven't been to a show, no. Yeah. I had a tarot, which was, it was pretty much on the Brighton front, and it was a bit, I felt.
Can you remember any of the cards?
I can't remember the cards.
They say you're going to have a book podcast one day.
You know what? They did say, and I said, what's podcast? No, he said, I knew it was bullshit because he was like, oh, you're going to marry, your husband will not be, you'll be much cleverer than your husband, but he won't know. Okay. True, actually true. Yeah. But, and he said,
that's true of every woman with a husband.
That's the old trick, isn't it? Yeah. That's like Alison with the middle-aged woman who says, oh, yeah, you're on the go.
You're a real goer, yeah.
Helping other people. But
yeah. You never stop, do you? Never sit down.
Yourself.
Yeah. Or your friends say, how'd you do it? Yeah.
Someone furiously nodding.
Yeah. And do you remember, were you there when we did that? We had to do like an interactive theatre thing and I played a psychic.
But you really looked like a psychic and people took you seriously.
People took me seriously. So I pretended to be a fortune teller, a palm reader.
And okay, just with a headscarf on, believe she is one. Okay.
I'd just like to caveat, it's offensive how I dressed. Yeah. I put big hoop earrings on and I put a scarf on my head. And I would not dress like that now, but it was the year 2000 and things were different then. And it was like people going into a theatre and me and Vanessa were like entertainment before they went in. And I was pretending to be a palm reader. I thought it was really obvious.
Is there an accent, or would you rather not say?
I'd rather not say. Okay. I'd rather not discuss it, Mike. I thought it'd be really obvious that I was not a palm reader.
Yeah.
But people took me immediately seriously. And within about 10 minutes...
People see what they want to see.
Within about 10 minutes, I worked out how to make some... Like, what to say to people. Mm. So just by looking at someone, and particularly middle-aged men, I'd grab their hand and I'd say, you work too hard. You work too hard. Your children, they never see you. Yeah. And they would look at me, the blood would drain from their face and they would go,
I'm underappreciated.
Yeah. And I thought, oh shit, everyone's believing me. And again, to women, just say you're underappreciated. And I got a bit like too into it. And then my boyfriend, now husband, had to say, you've gone mad.
You're changing lives.
No, he said, you think you actually can do this
and gifted.
You can't and you've lost your mind.
But what you're proving is how much of it, you know,
I'd like to apologise to all the communities I offended by doing that.
The psychology. It was so
easy.
You're giving yourself instant confirmation bias.
Yeah.
So all the rest of it.
See?
So in the year 2000, I went to a psychic who, and what's interesting is I still have it on tape.
Do you?
And I didn't understand at the time what she was saying to me, but she'd done a reading of me that I didn't identify because I didn't know. Mm-hmm. That's how I was seen. So this is quite interesting.
Okay, yeah, what did they say?
So the fact is I didn't have as much money as my friends and I didn't have money for clothes and things. I think I'd just started at the Millennium Dome. I'd moved out of home. I was working, living by myself in Leytonstone. Mm-hmm. And so the reading she did was, oh, this is the friend who doesn't have as much money as the other ones because they all still lived at home.
Oh.
So my reading is about how I was jealous of my friends and I don't have what they have. And I was sitting there thinking, this is not me at all.
But she was just judging, basically.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's only because I still had it listened to it years later that I realised, oh, that's what she was saying to me. And it was all about, like, you will have money in the future.
Well, she wasn't wrong.
A long time. But she picked a thing about me. Like, oh, that's the one in the friendship group who doesn't have, like, labelled clothes or something.
Yeah, yeah.
But it actually wasn't a thing that bothered me at all.
You should have said, you're fraud.
But that's why I realised, like, oh, of course. They're just
it's
doing
easy
psychology.
To pick things.
Yeah.
But that's why I love this book.
Yeah.
Because what I do love is that we all know psychics can do that.
Mm.
And when I started reading, the first time I read this book, we all know, like, obviously, you know, lots of it is psychology and reading, but the fact that then she just starts with, oh, but Alison can genuinely hear people. And you're like, oh my God, that's such a good character. Like, what
Morris is on the floor.
Well, the fact that he was a clown in the circus and he has bowed legs because someone beat the shit out of him. Like, yeah, he's an incredible spirit guide. Like, what a character.
Yeah. Mm.
But I just love this idea that the whole time you're reading it, you're having to accept that Alison genuinely can hear spirits.
What I loved about Colette, actually, is that even though she absolutely saw it happening and knew Alison wasn't faking it, her mind couldn't accept it.
Yeah,
so I think that's
yeah.
where I would stand. You could absolutely, Mike, prove to me that you knew things that you couldn't possibly know because someone else was telling you. And I would go, I believe you're doing it, but I don't believe it. As in, I can't, my worldview can't change because of it. When I was
pregnant. She's just got that one moment, though, doesn't she? That phone call.
Oh, yeah, the phone call.
If it wasn't for that phone call.
Yeah.
to her mother-in-law, I'm sure she'd be able to be dismissive.
Obviously, she gets a phone call from her mother-in-law
in the first place.
Yeah. and she has a brief phone call from her, and then she finds out she's actually dead.
And she lied about having a stair lift because she's lived in a bungalow.
Yeah. So then Colette has this like, oh my God, like, and she does have a spirit guide who actually Alison steals at the end.
Yes.
Who's this like sweet old lady who's sort of following her around. Looking for her friend.
Maureen Harrison.
Maureen Harrison.
When I was very newly pregnant with my first son, Steen was doing a press interview to Australia. He was on a Zoom. So I was about 6 weeks and we'd done IVF. So, it wasn't public knowledge or anything like that. And this woman said, at the end of the interview, she went, I've loved talking to you. Do you know I'm a medium? Right.
What?
And he said, I didn't know that. And she said, I've got this really strong message and I'm not, I have quite strict morals. I don't tell people things unless they want to hear them, but I'm getting this really strong thing to tell you. And then he said, okay. And she said, it's about your wife. And she said she's really worried. She's holding her stomach. She's really worried about her stomach. And then she went, oh, I've just realised. Oh, so she's pregnant. And so it was so crazy. So that happened and it was completely
crazy.
Oh my
God.
I know, but I still don't believe it. Does that make
Had you been talking about
nothing,
IVF
nowhere,
or anything like that
nowhere,
publicly?
No, nothing like that. And this woman was in Australia and didn't know who I was at all. Like, she wouldn't have known that Steen's wife was a comedian even. She was just, and I do believe that people can give off
via Zoom.
Pick up things, even over Zoom. Pick up things over
each
other.
That's mad.
It is mad.
That's a good one.
Oh, it's...
That's a good, it's media
crazy
story.
And I remembered it, reading this book, thinking about things for us to talk about. I was like, oh, shit, that happened. My dad's side of the family, the Pascos, they have readers and psychics and angels and all of those kind of things. And it's quite, Essexy, where, because there's one in New Zealand, and they'll just go, I can't remember what her name is. It'll be like, just, Claire from New Zealand. Claire from New Zealand rang. She says.
Right.
And they sort of like dobbing each other in, all the sisters. Like, why is she telling you?
Telling you about that.
Yeah. And she's had a lot of, from New Zealand, even just like, Wingale, she's not well.
Yeah. I find I'm really tricky because I had tarot cards as a teenager. Mm. I was rewatched The Craft over and over again. Light as a feather, stiff as a boy. And I loved that stuff. But then when I started doing Griefcast, I actually moved very much away from it. Because the one thing I will say is grieving people are so vulnerable.
Yeah,
and they want to hear a message so badly. Mm. And I often talk about, I've had stuff with my dad that's like, sort of like, oh, that's an unusual coincidence, but I've never had
Have you had people contact you saying they have messages from him?
Yeah. Family members are believers and they go to spiritualist churches and they ring me up and they say, so your dad said this. And as I've always said, my mum and I have always said, well, it's a shame that he's fucking talking to, Susan from Aldershot and he's not talking to his wife and daughter. Like, if he has a message, you think he'd come and speak to me rather than going to Susan from Aldershot, who's drawn a picture of a bearded man and said, is this your father?
Yeah. People are so contactable now.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. And actually, he would have been very into that. I have then got much more cynical as I got older.
Yeah.
But that's why this book appeals to me, because it appeals to that teenage me that's like, there are spirits and you can talk
yearning
to them.
Has anyone ever contacted you saying, I've got a message for you?
No, there's...
no messages.
There's quite a senior air commodore who's done some work on my Polish grandfather's a bomber pilot, but that's very much documentation rather than spiritual stuff.
Yeah.
I wonder, can I just read you a quote that she said, Mantel said?
Yeah.
This was an interview with CBC, the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation.
Okay, not CBBC.
No, sorry. Not CBBC. Interview with CBeebies.
Oh, yeah. She did a lovely story at bedtime.
How do you feel about Hey Dougie? She said, if Alison could remember the past, she could really nail it. Perhaps it would lose its power over her. And I thought that was a really, the idea of that's what psychics and mediums are. Sometimes manipulating, if you want to see it like that, or sometimes using to help, is the power the past has over us. And that's what I think this book, that's why I love this book, because I think it's about what the past, how much it haunts us. It's haunting Alison, and whether the spirits are real or not real, you could see them as a metaphor. That is her, that's the past just constantly talking to
Carrie, what you're saying is incredibly deep and insightful.
Oh, thanks.
She's haunted
so
by
shocked?
The past.
Yes, she's literally
and
haunted.
And it's full of ghosts.
Yeah. She's literally
That's
haunted.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
I get it now.
Oh,
I get it now.
Well, you told me she died. So we both learn. We both learn. Yeah. And I think that's what I find so interesting about Mantell's writing is I feel like she writes characters that haunt you. Like, I feel like when I'm not reading her books, I'm still thinking about the characters.
Okay.
And I felt like this with Alison. I was worrying about them. And I felt like with Wolf Hall, just like, God, what's Thomas Cromwell going to do? How's he going to get out of that? And I feel like she, her ability to create worlds and characters that you are just immersed in. And I would say, if you've never read Mantell, like, you should, because she's one of
she's
our greats.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Did you enjoy it, Mike?
That was I really enjoyed
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
Oh, good.
I genuinely did. I mean, I'm not, you know, very recently postpartum.
Yeah.
I don't think I'm fully at the sort of 20s psychopath phase, but I'm maybe somewhere else where I can remove myself enough that I was able to find it funny. And
it was very
that.
Funny.
You still, there's lots where you'd go, ooh, that's in, as you've said.
Yeah.
But I think I was able to distance myself enough to enjoy it.
I was trying to write down, because there were some such incredible jokes, but it was a bit like,
so good.
Someone who has routines where the punchline is really great, but you need to know loads of stuff beforehand.
Yeah. There's a brilliant bit about men. Can I just...
I wrote that down because I was going to ask Mike to answer to it right at the beginning.
Why can't men just stand? Yeah. Colette wondered. Why do you have to sway on the spot and feel in their pockets and pat themselves up and down and suck their teeth?
Tell us, Mike. Why do men have to do that?
Why can't they just stand?
It's guilt. It's guilt and shame. They're being found out.
I think Mantell would like that explanation.
Yeah.
Do you have a last line?
I didn't have a last line.
This is right towards the end of the book. Okay. At some point on your road, you have to turn and start walking back towards yourself, or the past will pursue you and bite the nape of your neck, leave you bleeding in the ditch. Better to turn and face it with such weapons as you possess. Oh, Mantell.
Very good.
Good advice.
Thanks
Thank you so much, Mr. Wozniak.
Thanks for having me.
Dr. Woz.
Thank you for listening to the Weirdos Book Club. My novel Weirdo and Carriad's book You Are Not Alone are both available now.
And you can buy tickets for our live show at Foyles on the 25th of January. Available now.
Thank you for reading with us.
We like reading with you.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Hi, I'm Lucy Beaumont.
And guess what? I'm Sam Campbell.
If you've enjoyed this podcast, you might enjoy our podcast. It's called Lucy and Sam's Perfect Brains.
We have a podcast and it might be, I probably don't want to sound, like I'm bragging, but it's dynamite. It is electric. It's high voltage. And please, we really need you to listen. You don't understand how much we need this.
Is it on all the platforms?
Oh, it absolutely is. But this one's out now. Lucy and Sam's Perfect Brains.